Anyway, I just want to say it was an honor for me to be here and go on it, and to have the five candidates that we have will be a real pleasure. It'll be very interesting to see how they comport themselves, how they relate to one another, and of course, what ideas they want to express about this city. Somebody told me that the first question I should ask would be, why do you want to govern the city of Los Angeles? It's ungoverned. But maybe we'll find out as we go along. This is a nonpartisan event. We're asked, not to express your support or your disapproval of candidates during the program. You can kind of make laughs or jokes if you want to, but that's all we needed. So far, 12 people have registered to run for mayor of Los Angeles. That's too many for a 1-hour session. So the five on the stage with me were chosen based on the City Ethics Commission's threshold for campaign matching funds. The seating order and the initial speaking order were randomly assigned. Full biographies are in your program. Very quickly, the candidates are, and I'll take them in the order that they are supposed to speak. First, Jan Perry, former president pro tem of the LA City Council, currently representing the 9th District, serves on the Joint Powers Authority for the Grand Avenue Committee, the South Coast Air Quality Management District, and the Opposition Light Rail Authority. Eric Garcetti is the former president of the LA City Council. He's currently representing the 13th District. Former teacher of policy, diplomacy, and public affairs at Occidental College in USC. Rhodes Scholar, Rockefeller Foundation Next Generation Leadership Fellow. Wendy Gruhl is currently the Los Angeles City Controller. She is the former president pro tem of the City Council. Served in the administration of the late Tom Bradley in the Housing and Urban Development Department of the Clinton Administration, and worked as well for DreamWorks SKG. Austin Buechner is formerly the first deputy mayor and chief executive of economic and business policy during the current administration of the Obama administration. Most of his career was spent in the financial industry. He worked in Russia with the U.S. State Department. He's on the board of CalArts and Broad Grove State. And finally, Kevin James is an attorney in private practice. He's was co-chair of AIDS Project LA, and he is a former assistant U.S. attorney in Los Angeles. Received the Director's Award for Superior Performance from the Department of Justice. Let's give them all a hand. I want to begin by asking you all the same question, the same first question. You have a couple of minutes to answer. I've been told to brutally keep track of time and interrupt if that goes on kind of too long. I'm sure none of you will do that. You're all very kind of format. After you've answered the first question, we'll have sort of a round robin. If you want to comment on what each other is saying, please try to signal to me, and I'll be looking around for that and give you an opportunity to do that for 30 seconds or so. We want to try to keep the time as equal as we possibly can. We don't have a lot of time. At approximately half an hour into the proceedings, or perhaps a little longer than that, we'll go to you in the audience. There are going to be people with microphones who will hold them with death grip and not give them to you, but will hold them in front of you so that you can speak. Let me begin once again with Jan Perry. LA, one of the wealthiest cities in the country, has a very high rate of poverty, as you know. It has a vigorous philanthropic community, which is well represented here, but by comparison to other cities, the rate of giving by wealthy people. What would be your first strategy if you were elected mayor to try to do something about that?
Well, I would look to what I have done over the past 10 years, which is to work with successful nonprofit providers of affordable and permanent supportive housing and begin to dig in even deeper, to leverage our resources even more, to build more permanent supportive housing for people who are homeless with support services on site. And I would also focus on children and their families, much the same as New York has done with the Harlem Children's Zone, and focus on areas that have the highest dropout rate, the highest truancy rate, the highest crime rates, and infuse that area with philanthropic leverage money, work with educational institutions that are doing well, work with charter schools and social service providers to develop an overall strategy to lift an entire community up with infusion of those kinds of resources.
Eric Garcetti, same question.
It's a wonderful question, and thank you to SCG for having us here. Back in the days when it was SCAP, another sort of on the board, and I know many of the folks have been a part of this. This has been such a catalytic group for the city. And it's a great question because Los Angeles has a reputation, and in some ways rightfully so, for us not knowing each other and not connecting with one another. It's a city that lives in silos. We've structured it that way, 88 cities and a county. We've structured it that way, school districts separate from air quality management districts, separate from our county, separate from our city. And it's really been this group that's part of the catalyst for, I see all these threads kind of stitching together out of the fabric. But why is it that when we have 28 billionaires here, when we have combined net worths of $1.3 trillion in the city, why is it that compared to Chicago and New York, when they have a problem, they kind of press a button and those people who, whether they care about Central Park or not, Central Park needs fixing, everybody steps up. I think part of it is that we've never been able to structure this city in a coherent way. One of the reasons I want to be mayor is because I want to be able to create those connections in the same way that you have, in the way that I have in the heart of the city in the 13th Council District, where we bring together business and the nonprofit sector and government to solve problems together, whether that is the lack of park space that we have, the green space. In my own district, we have less than an acre for every 1,000 people, and 13 parks to serve a quarter million people. Well, you know, 10 years later, we just opened a park, 38 parks, 25 new parks that we built, not just because the city made it a priority, but we brought business into that. We created a new nonprofit, the Neighborhood Land Trust, that came out of City Hall, but spun out because we have to admit in government what we do well and what we don't do well. Or whether it's looking at Cash for College, a great program that was started by, so I'll let you go in here, you know, a small family foundation can seed something that becomes the largest college scholarship fair in the country, serving literally 100,000 kids and getting them into success in college. We have to break down barriers, and I think we're going to need in our next mayor, no matter who it is, and I'm honored to be on this stage with my fellow candidates, somebody who can cross those geographic and also those subject matter barriers and really bring people together to say that Los Angeles, just like the great cities of the world, does have a common destiny, does have a common purpose.
Wendy Grillo.
Well, we're here today, and believe it or not, I think there's some similarities between philanthropists and elected officials, and particularly mayor of the city. I helped create a program called LA's Best in 1988. I worked for Tom Bradley at the time, and it was the same thing that we find today, where we went to the school district and said, we want to start this program. We want this to happen. And there was resistance on the other end. It was taking what we have in the city of Los Angeles and saying, we care what happens in education. And philanthropists do the same thing. They want to change the structure, not just fund a program. I know some of you in this room, you fund great programs, but you want to see change and change people's lives. So in LA's Best, our goal was to change people's lives and to create that partnership. And when we look at the difference today from where it was in 1988, we went to 180 schools. So you want to scale up, right? You want to start something that then can grow to change Los Angeles and change lives. Just a few months ago, I went and visited a charter school in Lincoln Heights. And we sat and talked, and it asked me this question, which you may be asked as philanthropist or nonprofit. What is the thing you are most proud of in your career? And I answered, LA's Best. And to my surprise and joy, those 12 kids, every one of them had been in LA's Best and told me it changed their lives. So what you want in a mayor is someone who says, I'm going to not only help create something that I can scale up, that is metric driven, that is going to be able to be a national model. It is to use the bully pulpit and to use whether you are a philanthropist or you are an elected official to say, I want to make a change. So as mayor, I'm going to look at the issues that are important that I've dealt with over the years, homelessness and housing, where we changed the way we looked at serving the homeless in Los Angeles when I worked for Department of Housing and Urban Development. We had national housing incentive programs, homeless incentive programs. Now, not everyone was excited about it. They were very flexible dollars, but we said there's going to be benchmarks. You don't get your next funding until you actually accomplish that next level. We met with a lot of resistance, but again, it was changing structures, changing the way we do business, and it was changing lives. We also want to deal with the issues of childcare and after-school program. We want to look at creating jobs and job training, and the opportunity I've had as city controllers to do the same thing, which is to say, how do you identify a problem, and how do you solve it, and how do you push the envelope? And so as mayor, my goal is going to be to bring all of you in the room to not only help you fund programs, but fund programs that fundamentally change the way we do business in Los Angeles, the way we deal with social issues, the way we deal with job training or other kinds of programs. And so as mayor, I've had this experience over the years to not only be local, federal, DreamWorks, and doing charitable giving, but also being able to say, how do we make LA better? And most importantly, how do we change it with all of you in this room?
Austin Gunner.
If I go back to the question, how are we going to engage resources in this community? And I think that's a good place to start, because we need to do things differently. My experience over 30 years in the private sector is focus on the result, not the process, not the rhetoric, focus on the result. Spend too much time in Los Angeles listening to all the problems, not the confidential. Now, I think we have very good examples in our community, whether it is the Venice Clinic, where they can go to a donor and demonstrate, in addition to the donated money, there's volunteers and they're serving the needs of the community. We can look at examples of Christmas. Christmas goes to a donor and says, for $2,000, I'll find somebody a job. Contrast that with the Workforce Investment Board. Heaven knows how much money they spend to find one job. I chair the Board of CalArts, serve the needs of Continuation High School, which are applied for CalArts and the Liberal Arts Partnership, providing arts education. Those kids would not have the credentials to go on to a California college. So I think the fundamental thing we have to do is change, and we have to invite everyone in this room, everyone else in Los Angeles who cares about the city of Los Angeles, to be at the table seeking to get a result. So the first thing I focus on is demonstrate where in the community we need, have a need, and how together we can make a result. It's a fundamental change from how Los Angeles is operating for the last 10 years.
Thank you, and I too want to thank everyone for coming out today and the free organizations that are hosting this event. I'm very honored to be here. I was kind of a late add to the crew, so I'm thrilled that to have the opportunity to talk to you and talk about my ideas as the outsider here for Los Angeles. I think what we need to do is to convince Angelenos to be better at giving where they live. I was the chairman for a number of years of AIDS Project Los Angeles, one of the local nonprofits that had Los Angeles in its name. And one of the things that we realized in those very important years of the AIDS epidemic was that when people invested in APLA, they didn't just invest in our agency, but they invested in Los Angeles. Because in their minds, we were a part of Los Angeles. And when I was the chairperson of APLA, we had one of the most critical decisions that we had to make in the AIDS epidemic. AIDS had changed. We were focused in one central location. We were at Hollywood, right there in Hollywood, at Fountain and Vine. And we served primarily the gay community and the entertainment community. But the face of AIDS had changed. And we needed to move the agency away from one central location and into other parts of our city, low-income parts of our city, minority communities that needed our services that could no longer come to us for the food bank services or the mental health services that we provide. We needed to go to them. So I made the decision. We sold that building, and we then opened satellites around LA. And in just the last couple of months, I was in Baldwin Hills for the opening of the 13th satellite of AIDS Project Los Angeles. So that has continued to this day. I make that point because it is so important that people see that the city is functional, that the city works. And that's what I think when people look outside the city, when we see that national foundations donate to Los Angeles at a much lower level than they do in other major cities, they see dysfunction in the city of Los Angeles. So to answer your question, Warren, about the first thing I would do, it's twofold. Number one, going back to my priorities, we must make Los Angeles a more business-friendly city. I saw so many people raise their hands but representing nonprofits, you know, that's where your donor base comes from, private business. And if we don't have enough private business here, the support you get from the government isn't going to be there either. So we need to raise both of them up. Point number two, the Wall Street Journal just published in the last few days this headline that was so sad to see, that Los Angeles has now met Chicago as one of the two most corrupt city governments in the nation. Steve Lopez in the LA Times wrote about it again yesterday. That doesn't make it easier for us to sell AIDS Project Los Angeles or any other local charity. And that's something that we must do to grow giving where they're living. That's what we have to do, and thank you for the question.
Where's the corruption in Los Angeles, particularly, and what would you do to get rid of it?
What I'm not sure people realize, I'm a former assistant United States attorney, and it has been published in the media quite extensively, but it amazes me on the campaign trail how many people have missed it. There's a federal grand jury that is investigating various departments of our city government. We know this because there have been indictments from Building and Safety, the Building and Safety Department. You have read about the indictments of employees in the Housing Department. We know that there's investigations of the Housing Authority, which is so important to groups like this. At AIDS Project Los Angeles, one of our most important services was the Housing Assistance Program. Yet we have a corrupt housing authority in the city of Los Angeles, not to mention what we saw with their commissioners. To answer your question about what I would do about it, Warren, people often think that to solve the problem of corruption, that what you have to do is arrest your way out of it or convict these people and try them and throw them into prison. You don't. It was demonstrated recently. All you have to do to end corruption is expose it. And what we haven't had is someone inside city government that is willing to expose the corruption, because then the corruption gets out before the media gets it. Thank goodness for the LA Times and their Pulitzer Prize around the city of Bell. But if you had somebody on the inside, one, that wouldn't do it to begin with to end the culture of corruption, but two, that would get in and expose from the inside what's going on, you don't have to wait on the media to expose it, because as I say often, by the time the media gets it, oftentimes the train's left the station. And it hurts when they rip off the public, because our organizations count so much on public money in addition to private funds.
I don't want to get too far away from the idea of philanthropy, but it seems to me that if the investment is what it is, if it's been difficult to get funding from outside the city, which everybody thinks we should do, all the rest of you have in fact served the city in one way or another, just to give you for the shortest period of time. But do you agree that there is corruption in the city, and if so, aren't you done anything about it?
Well, I do believe there are some elements of corruption that are present in our city, and I think that we're going through a process right now that may have its roots in some element of corruption. I'm talking about the redistricting process. I think we have to believe, as public servants, we have to believe in a process, and I think we have to avail ourselves of that process, and for lack of a better word, expose and put on the public record for the public's consumption examination in a hearing for all to partake, as many factual bits of information as you can gather, as many legal issues as you can put out on the table. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to tell a story, or let the story tell itself, and then it goes wherever it goes. Now, in my opinion, and I've been through three of you just cycles. I was public services 1990 and private sector before that. And I think that politics has changed radically over the last 10 years. A large part of that has to do with term limits and the implementation of term limits, where people are coming, people are going. There's far less accountability than there ever has been in the past. And, you know, no consequences. We're in a no consequences zone now. So I think when you see people coming from Koreatown and battling their way to be able to get into Eric's district, for example, and they talk about how they've been treated by members of the city government over the last decade and before, I think we need to, and the media needs to, report those stories. We need to hear those stories, because there's elements of something in there for all of us. Because if one group gets mistreated or marginalized or disrespected, it can happen to anybody. And I've been putting that on the record almost on a daily basis now for a couple of months.
You know, as the city controller, part of my job clearly is auditing some of these departments, and we have focused very much though on the housing authority, on the not only in the housing department, but the Health Care Commission, as well as building and safety department. I was kind of shocked when we did our audit of the expenditures on travel, and we're now doing a larger audit of the housing authority, that the response was, well, it wasn't federal funds, so nothing illegal happened. And my response was, those are dollars that could have been used to house those less fortunate. Those are the dollars that we need to make sure are going to individuals who are doubling and tripling up or on the streets of Los Angeles. And so it is incumbent upon all of us, whether you are inside government, outside government, and particularly as city controller, to put things out there to say, here's where you can do it better, here's where we found things, where we refer them to the appropriate entities that are going to investigate them, but more importantly, how we move forward and change the system. And I go back to what it is philanthropists and nonprofits and the city government elected officials want to do, which is to change where we're going forward. And that's what I focused on as a city controller, to make sure that we do that. But all of our dollars should be spent in a way that, for me, the most important for the people who deserve them. And with the city of Bell, we were the first, I was the first elected official to put on the website every single salary of every city employee in Los Angeles to say we want to be open to what's happening and on. We want to be transparent and assure the public that those of us that are elected are doing everything we can to ensure our taxpayer dollars are being spent.
But it took the city of Bell to do it.
Let me give everybody a shot here.
To put it into context, I spent a year in City Hall. I spent 30 years in the private sector. And one of the great differences in City Hall is it is not transparent. The average Angelino is told one thing, and the fact that he says, without the fact that he's entirely at odds. An example, LA Times had a story just in the last 2 months. Current law enforcement detectives working overtime are paid with an IOU. Not in cash. If you have any of your day jobs and work some overtime, you probably call it a check after a week or two. They're paid with an IOU. The IOU was paid, by coincidence, right after the next mayor's race. So I think, well, I'm not talking about the legal corruption, but I think that, of course, if you're in a city where people don't have confidence that the money is well spent, that there is a scorecard. Is the city doing the job that hired the people to do, elected the people to lead us? And I look at the articles more broadly than the literal corruption, not the prosecutor's side, for Kevin. But I think we haven't made it transparent. The LA Times had an article, and I've yet to hear anybody, an elected official, in office today comment on that article, because I have a broken leg. But I've yet to see anyone in office comment on the LA Times article on whether or not it's appropriate, the way we pay law enforcement for the work they do today. So I look at the issue of corruption and say, if we're not transparent, how do we, as people who vote, as people in the community who deserve service, how do we know whether that service is being provided, whether we have the resources to do the job or not? So I think it's more fundamental than just the issue of one or two bad apples who are obviously violating the law and need to be taken care of.
You know, we're coming up with the 20th anniversary of the unrest in the city. I think it's a more fundamental question about whether trust has been established and whether it's not just about people's impression about government, but it's about our impressions and feelings about each other, too. And the Wall Street Journal article was a good one. Talk about the region. I want to make sure, because I think you stated, talk about LA city corruption. Talk about the region, including Riverside, Ventura, small cities as well. But all of us on this stage, I mean, whether you're a prosecutor, whether you're the son of a prosecutor, whether you're the controller, whether you care about these things, all of us do take, must take, and have taken strong stance against corruption when we see a housing inspector who demands a payment. When you have somebody from building and safety who wants a payoff. When you have a housing authority in which people have expenditures they should not have. And the nice thing is we actually do have one of the most open forms of government. Unlike Sacramento or unlike Washington, you can come, and I invite you tomorrow at 10 a.m. to come to the podium for 6 years as council president. Watch people, if they come here, they can say once in a while you've done a great job, they can say you're doing a lousy job, they can say as they did today, I'm about to lose my house. Or a lot of the people from the Occupy movement that were there this morning who were with a woman who not only had lost her house due to a bank foreclosure, but then was arrested when she tried to stay there and keep the house. And we can go immediately and start working with them on solving that problem, on actually improving their lives. There's nothing more accountable. Being a local government, you either fix the problems of the city and you get to enjoy the outcome if you see a neighborhood like Hollywood turn around, violent crime cut by 66%, schools built, after school programs established, a cafe you actually get to go, an alleyway half a block east of Coendo, which we just opened 5 days ago, which together nonprofits and businesses turned from a place that was full of crime and grime into a place with outdoor dining right next to the Hollywood Farmers Market. Or if you don't fix it, you have to suffer through that. You have to drive over that pothole. You have to see the closed storefronts. And so 20 years after the riots, the question we should be asking ourselves is not the distractions of the politics of fear, but what do we do to build a community of inclusiveness? The superficial response we had after the riots, which was, hey, if we all just get along and get some Koreans and African Americans together and they learn to eat differently and all that kind of stuff, we'll have a new city. In my experience, it's actually building projects together. When I go, and once a month I walk a different neighborhood in my district with a couple dozen friends. We go door to door. When somebody opens their apartment and invites you in, says, wait, you're not trying to convert me to something? You don't want to sell me something? You don't want to paint the numbers on the curb? You actually want to hear what I have to say in my neighborhood? Well, why is it down there that that empty lot has been empty for 2 decades? Why does my kid feel scared to walk to work? Why do I have to paint graffiti out every single day on my garage? And that's what this is about. I don't want to be too distracted by just the politics of fear here. What do we do as a nonprofit community and as a city to build that community? That is the trust that we need. That is what we do.
So we're here to talk about getting more money. And nonprofits are going down the rapid rate. Are you all saying that we have to do other things first, that we have to make this city, give it a better reputation, that you make people have more trust in it before more money can be?
I think part of it is we need to change the way we do things. It's interesting. If you look at the Department of Cultural Affairs, which is part of the city's effort to engage with the arts community, they have a budget, a certain amount set aside to fund arts and arts education. That's not the biggest source of public money for arts education. The biggest source in the last year was actually the tax imposed on the airport. Every capital project pays something for art. So that amount of money from the Bradley expansion was actually greater than the Department of Cultural Affairs. Let's put the pieces together. Let's be transparent, because couldn't that money be better spent than rather display or visual art within the four walls of the airport? How about we turn that into arts education for the impacted communities which surround the airport, music, art, in some way help educate and make those dollars go further? So there are plenty of resources if we can demonstrate we're making a difference with them, if we can become more transparent and allow Angelenos to make a choice about where those resources are better spent.
Is there also a specific idea of how you can take a given program and use the money differently to deal with the kind of problems that we're talking about?
I think about a couple of projects that I've done in South Los Angeles, one at Slauson and Compton and one at 54th and Avalon. And the basis of the money for these projects was Proposition O, King Water Bonnet. Eric and I worked on it together. It was one bright spot that passed that year. What it's done is created multi-use projects, better management of urban runoff, better wastewater management, recreational opportunities, outdoor educational classrooms, green space, all from this bond money. So it created two wetlands in South LA. And the second one is just open at 54th and Avalon. It's 10 acres. And eventually, once they have all the flora and fauna grows in, we already have birds landing there now and bridges, and it's across from a high school, it's across from a middle school. So, you know, we leverage this opportunity to make it part of the educational community in South Los Angeles, but it also gives people a place to exercise, a way to clean the air, it removed blight, it gave construction job opportunities to the people who live in the immediate area, and it created all of those things, and we did it with state money, tax credits, clean water bond money, no private money, or water, other types of water funds, but it created an opportunity that didn't exist before. It was just the same way it's done at Slauson and Compton, which has, you know, all kinds of birds living there now. And so it's an opportunity for people to have a different, healthier quality of life right in their immediate neighborhood. And we've leveraged mostly public funds and bond money, but we have to be strategic about it. So, you know, you embed it in a neighborhood, a residential neighborhood around schools, along a transportation corridor, so people can get there without a car, so they have other social services to access in the area, and to be able to have a healthier quality of life.
We are facing new challenges in the last recent, and especially the most recent few years that we haven't faced in a long time. We need, more than ever, to focus our efforts as nonprofits on the poor. And when we face the economic challenges in the city of Los Angeles, whosoever number you choose, whether it's the 1 in 5 unemployed, as Mr. Beaver mentioned at the AIA forum the other night, or it's 14.8% unemployed, which was in a recent city council motion, or it's 12%. Either way you cut that, it's 50% higher unemployment in the city of Los Angeles than the national average. That means that our poor communities need our services more than ever. And so we absolutely have to be able to lift them up, because when we have the circumstance that we're facing right now, with unemployment as high as it is, those are many of your donors that are now unemployed. The LA Business Journal reported that since December 2007, 400,000 jobs have left LA County. Now, you know a lion's share of those jobs left the city of Los Angeles. Those companies are donors to your agencies. I know that at APLA. When I lost a company that was a donor, not only did I lose that donor's money, but I lost those volunteer hours, and I might have even lost the product that that business gave to our agency. And so when you see it's exponential, the pain that you all must face when we don't have the kind of money in government or on the private sector. And my point, one, is that if we don't focus on making the city more business friendly, then all of this other discussion is just noise. And to mention something that Mr. Garcetti said a moment ago, whether your priorities are education, or they're the budget, or it's infrastructure, or it's jobs, or public safety, or traffic, how can we, as city officials, really be effective in solving those problems if the public doesn't trust the government? And that's the reason that I talk so much about the culture of corruption as a whole. Whether it's a couple of bad apples in the Building and Safety Department, or the Coliseum Commission, or a Wall Street Journal story that put us in the top two, that, by the way, Mr. Garcetti didn't even count the district attorney prosecutions. So unfortunately for all of us, we are going to be number one. What I'm trying to tell you is that it absolutely matters to the work that you're doing. And if we are able to restore public trust in our local government, then it would be amazing what we can all do together.
Let me hear briefly from Wendy Gruhl and from Mayor Garcetti, and then I think we want to open it up to questions. Go ahead.
Now, this is a city of hopes and dreams. My grandfather moved here because he wanted to have an opportunity in Los Angeles. My father was born here and wanted to have the opportunity. This is a great city, but we have some challenges we're facing right now, and we cannot do it alone. The government won't solve all the problems, and the private sector can't solve the problems. It's the collaboration and the importance of how we work together to make that happen, how we address the challenges that we're facing, whether it be our environment, whether it be our educational system, and that Los Angeles can be that place of hopes and dreams. I like to tell the story of writing a Ciclovia and having this woman scream out in the middle of the street, "I love Los Angeles," and everyone paused. And suddenly realized, wait, maybe I do love Los Angeles. And I started clapping, but there was that pregnant pause. So there are opportunities in LA to change the way we do it and to make sure that the partnership is there, that collaboration. To make sure government works better, there are clearly a lot of things that we can do differently. But there are a lot of things that we are trying to change in job creation, a lot of things that we're trying to do to get our fiscal house in order. And so when you go back to the, you know, ask us the question initially, why would we ever want to do this job? It's the best job ever. It is the most challenging, but it is the most rewarding when you're able to change those neighbors and those communities and the catalysts that you provide. Just to answer your question real quick, the things that we can do differently to change. I just did two audits recently. One was on job training, and we only spent 4% on training, and the rest we spent on placement. Okay, we don't have jobs to place people in right now. We need to train people. We need to spend, we need to change legislation to be able to do that. We need to have a grants office in Los Angeles that makes us more competitive. Makes us not only more competitive for the federal grant, but the grants that you have in this room. How are we coordinated within our city departments instead of the right and the left hand not knowing necessarily what they're doing? So government needs to do a better job, but we need to have that collaboration with each of you in this room. And I believe that glass is half full, and that all of you in the room wouldn't be here if you didn't feel that same way.
Thank you, Warren. You know, the original question was, how would we do something differently in an area of the city? I'll give you two. Our streets. Nothing's more fundamental than our streets. Jen mentioned Proposition O. Let me just mention Ciclo Vía. You know, a while back, we looked at it in a time of fewer and fewer resources. How do we do multiple things together? And we turned to foundations quite a bit. I said, use my council district as a canvas to experiment. And we took areas, for instance, where water pools, stormwater, and we had the federal requirements to clean up our water to a drinkable, swimming, official standard. So I authored and Jan helped me pass Proposition O, $500 million, the largest stormwater bond ever passed in the United States history. People said it would never pass. Instead of fighting Tequila Bay and the lawsuits that were there, I said, why don't we just try to actually clean the water up? And we got 73% vote, the second highest only to the zoo bond. So animals and water, people seem to vote for quite a bit. But when we got that money, besides putting, you know, storm drain inserts to catch trash that used to be in the LA River, we tested fish in the LA River that are actually healthier now to eat than those in the Bay, and the ones in the Bay are cleaner than they were 10 years ago. Here's a remarkable kind of picture of just how much we've done. We look, though, where all stormwater gathers. And it's one of the perverse things of our urban architecture that we have made the state, every bit of water that falls to the north of us is quickly washed down to us to be used for our drinking water. But anything that actually lands here, we wash out to the LA River, to storm drains, into the ocean, and retain it. So in Elysian Valley, formerly known as Frogtown, an area we went with Board of Public Works, and we figured out a way to unpave a street. And where the water used to gather, we now created a swale, something that would actually create a park at the end of the street, adjacent to the LA River, part of that revitalization, re-infiltrate the water and clean it up, and create a neighborhood park in an area that was parkable. Three things that we got out of one project. Ciclo Vía, 150,000 people funded by foundations in this room, including many of my families on. We have been able to see 150,000 people the last time come from Riverside, from Orange County, on a Sunday downtown, $200,000 from the city of LA. They offered the motion for it to be able to take the street and use it as a canvas. Street chess, celebration, people who are meeting each other for the first time, tours of Boyle Heights, you know. We actually enjoyed the city and remember we fell in love with Los Angeles all over. Second area, job training, which one do you just brought up?
Quickly, if you will.
Yeah, sure. We used to just help people basically work on their resumes and look through the one act. We call that job assistance. Working with SCOPE, a great nonprofit here, South Central Organized Political Empowerment, they came in, looked at the healthcare, see my former doctor from Kaiser. Kaiser had stopped advertising in Los Angeles for nurse assistance. They advertised in the Philippines, they advertised in Arizona, but not here. So we worked together with LACC, with nonprofits, to actually embed it at local high schools, and then in a new nursing program at LACC, with our unions and our hospitals and nonprofits together, a healthcare career ladder to give people those jobs. And once we're there, we stay with them. It's not reflected in the books of training because it's actually funded by the hospitals and the unions. So they go, and after they become a nurse assistant, they're a licensed vocational nurse. 3 years later, we help them become a registered nurse, et cetera, so they can have a career rather than just a momentary placement that they lose. Those are two dynamic ways that we come together to change the way we do it.
Okay, let's get some questions from the audience. Here we have one front over here.
Such a great conversation that we're having. I'm Danielle Brazal with Arts for LA. What three things would you do to deepen the city's investment in its creative and cultural economies, knowing that 1 in 8 jobs is directly related to the creative economy here in Los Angeles?
Let's get a quick answer from everybody if we can, and as many questions as possible.
Sure, rather than three, I'll give you one. Give everyone time to speak on the issue. Our creative economy is a foundation. It's not just the jobs in the creative industry. It's not just the grip behind the camera, but it's why the Toyotas of the world, the Coca-Colas of the world also come to Los Angeles, because it's part of our DNA. Stop and ask the question, where's the single biggest source of incentive money for filming right now? Most people might say, well, the state of California has an incentive film fund. That's nice, but the state's as broke as the city is. Unlikely that's going to be expanded. The single biggest source right now is EB-5 money. EB-5 is a program offered under the federal government where foreign investors can invest in the U.S. and create jobs. Someone in the private sector has raised a pool of $150 million to invest in films. Greater than the state set-aside fund, it's the single biggest source of incentives to create more filming in Los Angeles. The person who set up the fund called City Hall, called the offices of some of the folks on the stage who couldn't get their phone call returned. Okay, we have to think outside the box. We've got to change the way we do things. But if we're going to really go forward here and reimagine the creative community in Los Angeles, let's start by figuring out where the money's going to come from. Let's look overseas. Let's broaden our horizons. And EP5 is the first place I'd start.
I actually have two projects right now that are pending because of EB-5, and the investors are required to bring a minimum of $500,000 each. And the reason that they're coming to downtown Los Angeles is to build two new hotels. The reason is this market is so rich, it's on tap. We're on the verge of bringing a new stadium, a new convention center, and then we'll move from 15th in the country to 5th in the country. Travel and tourism and entertainment, and bring more people here, generate more revenue, and more people will go back to work. But we have to have some place for them to lay their heads down at night. And so we need more hotel rooms. And so that's tied into the creative economy and thinking outside of the box. So as we look globally for money and globally for investors to come in here and help us continue to expand and to grow, that's one vehicle to be able to do that.
Just want to make a point here. I'm getting on my screen the following. This is before Jen Perry spoke, but the message is Jen and Austin have 4.5 minutes each. Eric, Lundy, and Kevin have 8 minutes each. So be brief.
I'll be brief. Something very... sure, go by this. To be brief, how about something very, very basic? How about a long-term fiscal solvency plan for the city so we don't have to run $500 million deficits or $300 million deficits? Let's start there. Secondly, I do want to respond to something that Councilwoman Perry said about the stadium. We can't, the AEG proposal, we cannot rest our economic revitalization on what could be a pipe dream that the NFL's Roger Goodell has a choice over. And I refuse to put any kind of risk on the Los Angeles taxpayer for a football stadium. So that concerns me every time I hear that.
Must be a Raiders fan. As I know, Kevin knows, because Kevin's a lawyer and he's very smart, that the stadium is being built with private funds.
The question was three things. I'll be short to the point. One, boost cultural tourism. Karen Mack, I think, was here earlier. I've loved giving being a part of expanded tourism. Pomegranate Festival celebrates Little Armenia. Thai Town tours Badwater Village to celebrate our villages. Second, a music festival like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. This is the music capital of the world. I'm glad that Austin, Texas, has a music festival called South by Southwest, and it's wonderful and it's fun. But the greatest music in the world is made here. It has been made here. It's time for us to have that once a year on every corner, every church and synagogue, every performance space, an LA kind of fringe festival like they have in Edinburgh, for theater, music here. And third, I would love to make Ciclovia a monthly event.
Arts education. A greater emphasis on arts education in our schools. We are just woefully inadequate in getting arts education into our schools and for the future of Los Angeles. The other part of it that I would also focus is also on music. As Eric mentioned, you know, we have this wonderful Philharmonic and an opportunity to create Harmony Project and so many others here in Los Angeles that are being done with the Philharmonic, to create an environment that says music matters. Art matters, music matters. And thirdly is the entertainment industry and our creative, and say that it is at every single level, whether it is animation, where when I was at DreamWorks we funded a number of animation programs to make sure our industry was diversified in those areas and not getting people from other countries who had art in their elementary school and we don't. So I think those are three very important ways in which we can focus in on having arts as part of Los Angeles.
Okay, where are we going here? Over here.
Hi, I'm Fred Ellie, president of the Langer Foundation. Thank you all for being here. So all of you in one way or the other have mentioned the need I don't mean to put you all on the spot, but what the heck.
That's what we're here for.
One of the innovations of the Rio Grosso administration has been the creation of the Office of Strategic Partnerships. Probably the best example of how that's worked is the Summer Night Advice Program, where private sector and public sector work together to do something really wonderful for Los Angeles. So we're all sort of wondering what your commitment to the continuation of that office is.
I guess I'm short minutes. Can I go first?
Sure.
I think it's been a great idea. I think leadership makes the difference, so I really want to echo probably many in this room. Eileen has done a remarkable job, so thank you, Eileen, on behalf of the city. But that collaboration between public and private should extend beyond the philanthropic good that many in this room do. And let's talk about cultural tourism. I went to Shanghai on behalf of the city of Los Angeles during my year. I bought my ticket, went there. And it struck me when I knocked on the door and visited the folks at the Shanghai Tourism Bureau, they said, wonderful to see you folks from Los Angeles. The folks from Beverly Hills were here just yesterday. Turns out the city of Los Angeles, city of Santa Monica, city of Beverly Hills market themselves separately. I convened the Reagan Library, the Getty, the African American Museum, a bunch of institutions who'd never been in the same room before. None of those cultural institutions or cities work with Disney and Universal, the two biggest draws of tourists to our area. Now, this is solvable if you get public and private to work together. Look at what New York did with a similar set of issues about a half dozen years ago. Mayor Bloomberg said, let's get rid of this bureaucracy. Let's take a top Madison Avenue executive, and New York has probably the second best creative community after Los Angeles. They created something called New York & Co. 4 years later, they have 6 million additional tourists. Same 4 years in Los Angeles, less than 1 million more. So fundamentally, we have to change the way we do things. The good ideas are out there. That's not enough. We have to actually have leadership who understands how we're going to make change, do things differently. So that seat at the table earns you the right to help us reimagine how we bring cultural tourists to Los Angeles, for example.
Anybody here not want to continue the Office of Strategic Partnerships?
Can I
ask
him what my 4 minutes now? I wanted to tell you one experience that I had over the last 10 years of. Because I've been fortunate enough to represent an area that has a music center, the cathedral, Disney Hall, Our Lady of the Angels, the Japanese American National Museum. What I always ask of all of them is, what do you have that's free? And what do you have that's free that we can bring children and their families to attend and to experience? I see Michael Alexander here with his vigorous 26-year-long summer performances in Cal Plaza. And what I did is make sure that we got those kids there by bus or by volunteer. Now, I stopped counting. It's amazing how quickly you can do this. I stopped counting several years ago because I had already hit 30,000 children. And that's just bringing 30,000 kids from South Los Angeles alone. This is the kind of a concept to leverage those kinds of opportunities to at least serve people in a better way. It doesn't necessarily replenish your stores in terms of donors and money, but it certainly helps us to be able to maximize impact of what you do out in the grassroots level and out to the community.
And you want to keep the Office of Strategic Planning?
Yes, absolutely keep the Office of Strategic Planning. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's a good way to flow through and to act as a conduit for basically making marriages of industries, both public, private, philanthropic, nonprofit, and making them work on behalf of families and everyone's community.
When I'll promote the Office of Strategic Planning, Office of Strategic Partnership, I've seen it called both. I'll promote it. One of the things that wasn't in my bio, like Warren, I've been a radio host in Los Angeles for a decade. I was on a couple of radio stations. And as mayor, I would sit in that radio studio every Sunday afternoon from noon to 3, 1 to 4, 2 to 5, ask the mayor. You can call in. I'll answer your questions. You can offer solutions. I'll provide answers as well, but something that I did on my radio show is I featured a nonprofit in the city. The Braille Institute is a great one, public council. Obviously, AIDS Project Los Angeles, a number of those. That's something that I would do as mayor for the OSP as well.
I think that means I'll put you as match.com, the nonprofit world, and the city of Los Angeles, and that we should expand it. It goes back to, again, not just something that exists, depending upon who's the elected official, but a structural change in the city of Wellington. So let's have a match.com between philanthropy, nonprofits, and the public about where they can give their money and how they can help. Because we all know, even on Christmas Day when we were serving food at LA Family Housing, they had too many volunteers at lunch and not enough later on, or too many people who wanted to volunteer that day. We need them to volunteer every single day and give every single day, not just on the holiday. So how do we match that? That's why Summer Night Lights, which was created many years, Mark Ludlow kind of had the kernel of that, then it came in, and the mayor took it to that next level, the Summer Night Lights. It's taking City Year, which was only, I remember, 75, and going now to 210, let's go to 2,000. It's changing lives through that and having that match. That match.com in the city of Los Angeles, you're able to say, we're going to help direct you to the right way. And you also tell us, what are those issues that we should be looking at?
Eric Garcetti, your turn to vamp on the
vote. Both of you are great. Fred, thank you for what you've done for Summer Night Lights. I came out of a killing of a 16-year-old girl in our district in Glassell Park. I started at that park after dark. Also, some of the cues that we worked on for our logo. And then you've expanded to 32 parks, and you've been a big part of it. Is a perfect example. Alina's great, and yes, I would keep it. I would expand it three ways. One, we've done this the last 2 years. We started it first, and now with the mayor's office, we need to have a vibrant and a vigorous nonprofit day in LA. The Chamber of Commerce has done this every single year. We need to throw the doors open and have people come in, spend the first half of the day looking and coming together around similar topics. So arts groups and the ones that all come together, and healthcare groups would come together, and folks working on after-school programs. In the afternoon, then you get together geographically. Everybody from Northeast LA, everybody from South LA, everybody from the Northeast San Fernando Valley, so that you see cross-fertilization both with peers that are the same subject areas, but then peers that are working the same neighborhoods and communities together. Second thing that I would do to expand that is we have to look at ways that we could be more creative in the areas that the partnership's working on, and I think we have had such a great foundation, but for instance, in the area of technology, we need to see, for instance, and I have a group of advisors on my campaign, a lot of folks who are CEOs and founders of some of the top tech companies in the world. Many of them are working on entrepreneurship and on code, computer code. I'd like to see us have a partnership where we help Los Angeles Unified School District teach the second most important language after Spanish in this city, which is computer coding, so that you graduate having a workforce for Silicon Beach that wants to be here, wants to expand here, wants to grow here, but we're graduating the kids ready to take those jobs as well. So great foundation, awesome people, we grow it and keep it.
Next question? Over here.
Good afternoon, Brian Williams, Hotel Leadership Network. Leadership is obviously key to the future of our community, and unfortunately we don't have a whole lot of time to learn your leadership style. So my question is, can you think of a former mayor in the city of Los Angeles that would be most likened to your leadership style?
I want to give this one to Austin and to Ben. Barry, we're behind on time. Go ahead.
I could come up with a composite. I'd take from Mayor Bradley the inclusion. I think he's the last mayor in our city who's done, or he's done the best job of making sure Los Angeles was represented at the table. For Mayor Reardon, measurement and accountability, transparency. We need to be more transparent, we need to measure what gets done and hold people accountable. And lastly, Mayor Villaraigosa, for the inspiration. He is a dreamer. He sets forth that big idea, and I think if you combine that with measurement and accountability and making sure we're all represented at that table, I think it has a good idea.
I'd say Mayor Bradley, hands down. I think everything that we realize today, the development and the growth of our city, the growth of our transportation system, the proliferation of housing that is affordable, the issues of housing has evolved in helping people who are homeless started with Mayor Bradley, and he did it with a great deal of intelligence, a great deal of focus, and humility, and I would say even a great deal of elegance, which is, I think, a lost art in politics. The one thing that I do like about what Antonio Villaraigosa has done is he's opened the door on the debate on what we need to do to help our children in this area of education with the Los Angeles Unified School District, and I think it's good that he opened that door, and I think that the next mayor has to continue to keep that door open, and as mayor, I would submit to the voters a request or a proposal to allow the mayor to have a seat on the Los Angeles Unified School District Board as a representative of the city of Los Angeles to be able to push forward for systemic change and to not do it necessarily in a limited way, but to do it system-wide.
Next question. Yes.
Hi, I'm Shane Goldsmith, the Vice President of the Liberty Hill Foundation. And one of our core focus is developing leaders from low-income communities of color to lead efforts of social change in the city. So I'd like to hear from you about what you've done to both develop and engage grassroots leaders and what you will do as mayor.
I mentioned earlier that when the face of AIDS changed, we had some very daunting decisions to make at AIDS Project Los Angeles. And we took our agency, and our agency provides, it's an AIDS service organization. Many of you I know are familiar with APLA. It's a $20 million a year agency, hundreds of employees, thousands of volunteers that we manage. We served over 10,000 clients. And when we decided to sell the David Geffen Center, and move our agency into the communities, the minority communities that needed our services, we saw things happening in those communities that we had heard about, that we weren't necessarily ready for the new face of the epidemic. There was an entire drug culture, if you will, around the AIDS epidemic that we had not yet experienced. And we had to adjust immediately to that. We also had to change the face of the agency because the clients that we were serving, the income level of those clients had been significantly changed. So we, as I mentioned before, we actually took the agency and our services and opened up satellites of our Necessities of Life program, which is a food bank, our dental health services program, as well as housing assistance, which is one of the most important programs. So my experience in that very topic goes deep, and it was for a number of years.
We have just about 3 minutes left.
Jump in real quick. I'll do it again in 60 seconds. And merge the last two questions together. You know, my leadership editor is a great composite that Austin put together. I'd add to that Mayor Hahn's knowledge of how to get things done inside, because you can't walk out outside experience. I think it is clear from where the departments are, how things get done, and understand those processes. My vision of leadership is ground up, and thank you for the question. It is something, it is a strong vision, but built from the bottom up. That's why I do those walks once a month. But it's also why we created 10 years ago. I hired a community organizer, my chief of staff, Ana Guerrero, now used to head up UNO in East LA. We had a number of community organizers came in and built a neighborhood leadership institute. We graduated over 1,000 people in a district of 250,000 people from our soccer leagues, from our immigrant community, together with our consulates here, in multiple languages, in Korean, in Spanish. We have been able to teach them how government works. And some folks said, well, aren't you worried they're going to organize against you? I said, well, that's the point. You either believe you're a small D Democrat or not. You believe in empowered people or not. And so we have done that. We also developed a curriculum, Government 101, Planning 101, which is now the standard in explaining why do buildings get built in my neighborhood? How do we understand a planning and zoning code that seems to be just the few and the elites who understand it? So for me as mayor, I would take that Neighborhood Leadership Institute citywide. Let's see 10,000 new leaders in this city be trained over time that I'm mayor to be able to make sure that long after I'm gone, we have an infrastructure that doesn't depend on anybody on the state, but is ready for whoever comes next.
Okay, one more. I'm sorry. I think we need to get as many questions as we can, and there's very, very little time remaining.
This is Manuel Pasto from USC, and I'm glad to know that Eileen Adams has total job security. So, in this county, one-third of our residents are immigrants, nearly half of our workforce is foreign-born, two-thirds of our children have at least one immigrant parent, 90% of those kids are born in the United States. Can you say something specific you would do to promote immigrant integration in Los Angeles? For example, promote naturalization, but you may have other sorts of ideas. For example, what Eric was mentioning around civic engagement.
Can you all try to answer that in as short a time as possible, like 30 seconds or so? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think let's cut to the chase. I think we in Los Angeles have to lead the nation and start talking about real comprehensive immigration reform. That's where it begins and ends. And anybody who doesn't think the solution for Los Angeles is that, we're missing both. My dad was an immigrant. Our country has been based on embracing those around us. And we have to put everybody in Los Angeles on the path to be a citizen.
We are a city of immigrants, and what's the best about Los Angeles? education number one and making sure that every child has access to that and has equal education no matter where you live in the city of Los Angeles, and to ensure that we have the kind of national, federal legislation on the DREAM Act and others, that they have that opportunity. And I want to say one thing, because I did get answered the question. I am here today because of Tom Bradley and the Mayor's Youth Council, because he engaged with youth around the city. I met him at 17 years old, and he inspired me to be where I am today and engage people. And so that's what I think is, for me, important for me sitting here today.
Governor, the answer is yes to your question, and I have done it. As a lawyer, I've served pro bono hours, many of them, helping people that are coming to this country legally with the naturalization process, with citizenship. I've gotten awards and commendations from the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, as well as other elected officials. So I would continue that work and, in fact, grow it, but I've actually done it and sat there in the trenches.
As the grandson of Mexican and Jewish immigrants, I would bring back the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs, which I helped Mayor Hahn establish, which has kind of been lost in the last few years. I went to New York. I saw what New York has done. It is the model with our Chirlas, with our Defskas, with our Kiwas, all the groups that are already doing this work. It's time for the Mayor's Office to greet people who are coming into this city as migrants and teach them about civic engagement, to mainstream them, and then we can change that debate that Austin is so rightly talking about at the national level. When we have cities just like New York used to do at the turn of the 19th to 20th century, integrate people in, and I would bring back that Mayor's Office for New York.
Focus on children and their families and the needs of keeping families together, keeping families unified, making sure that there is family support. One of the greatest, and then finding a way to pay for that, to fund that through the schools, through nonprofit organizations, through religious organizations. And one of the ways that I'm looking at it is through the First Five, $800 million still sitting on the table, administered by an independent agency, but basically administered by the county. The city needs to have a seat at that table, too, so that we can bring our priorities to the table, since we are carrying the heaviest load in terms of a population and people who need to be served.
The race is just beginning. Let's thank all of our candidates.